I will call this meeting of the Housing Finance Policy Committee to order and note that we do have quorum present. First order of business, Vice Chair Agbaje, if you had a chance to review the minutes.
Yes, and I move the minutes, Mr. Chair.
All those in favor of the minutes being approved, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
The motion prevails. Members, we have one bill on the agenda today, House File 4009, and I first just want to say it's nice to see a packed house in attendance. I can't think of a housing committee hearing we've had that's had so many supporters here for a bill. And so because of that, I want to say at the outset, we have a lot of folks that have signed up to testify. We're going to spend about an hour on bill presentation and public testimony and try to reserve a half an hour for member questions and some amendments. And so with that, I will move House File 4009 to be recommended to be referred to the State Local Government Finance and Policy Committee to get the bill before us. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
The bill is before us. And then I will also move the DE1 amendment to be properly before us. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. With the bill before us, I will turn it over to Representative Kraft and Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Representative Howard and members of the Housing Committee. I am so excited to be here to talk about this bipartisan bill. Just so you know, the DE1 did several things. It merged into the bill language of 4009, a bill about multifamily developments in commercial district that is Representative Kozlowski's bill. So Representative Kozlowski and I will be tag teaming on this bill going forward. It also incorporates some changes that we've had from stakeholder input already. This is the beginning of a process. I'm excited to have the bill before this committee and continue that process of input and strengthening it. So before I start, the portion of the bill that I'm going to be talking about a lot is the missing middle housing. And for a baseline, I thought I'd start by defining that so we're all on the same page. It's housing that's between single-family homes and mid-rise apartments, such as townhomes, duplexes, triplexes, cottage homes, courtyard clusters. Now, every Minnesotan belongs in a home that is safe and affordable. But this American dream is increasingly out of reach. Now, in every metro and regional center in the state, everyone, the median income can't afford a median-priced single-family home. Just let that sink in. More than 600,000 Minnesotans are paying more than 30% of their income on housing costs. And Minnesota has one of the nation's worst racial home ownership gaps in the country. In my own community of St. Louis Park, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, I've lived here for 30 years, for 40 years, but I couldn't afford my house today. Or my kids can't afford to live here. Or I work here and can't afford to live here. Decades of underinvestment and exclusionary housing policies have left our state with a housing crisis, a gap of more than 100,000 homes we need to build. So we need to build a lot more housing, but we need to build it in the right places, and we need to build it in the right way, or we'll make our climate change problem and our sprawl problem immensely worse. Our number one source of greenhouse gas emissions in Minnesota is transportation, and land use drives transportation emissions. We need, over time, to make it easier to live our lives without having to drive as much. Where we build homes and housing is key. By the way, side benefits will be cost savings, less time in traffic, less air pollution, and more times with our families and in our communities. Another side benefit is farmland. A study by the American Farmland Trust said the kind of development we're encouraging can save almost 300,000 acres of Minnesota farmland from being paved over by 2040. Now, on to the bill, at least the missing middle portion. It does two basic things. It legalizes missing middle housing, and it ensures supportive city zoning and review processes. In the area of legalizing middle housing density, it sets a base level for density allowed, but not mandated, on a lot at 2 units statewide and 4 units in cities of the first class. It allows accessory dwelling units by right. And for cities with population in the bill right now over 5,000, it gives density bonuses if a lot is close to a major transit stop, if the builder commits to affordability, and if the housing built is net zero. If a city doesn't have a major transit stop, it needs to designate one commercial district to be treated similar to a major transit stop in terms of density bonuses. In terms of ensuring supportive zoning and city review processes, it puts some limitations on things like minimum lot size, setbacks, and other zoning items to ensure they don't get in the way of expanded housing options. It allows lot subdivision by right to make it easier for there to be ownership opportunities in the middle housing created. It limits aesthetic mandates to reduce costs. It streamlines city review processes with administrative design reviews and prevents costly off-street parking from being required close to a major transit stop and limits it to one spot per unit in other areas. Overall, it's about removing systemic impediments and setting up incentives so the result is right for housing and climate change, and so more Minnesotans can find homes and build wealth in the communities where they want to live, work, and raise a family. With that, I will turn it over to my co-lead here, Representative Kozlowski.
Representative Kozlowski.
Thank you, Chair and Representative Kraft. I'm proud to be here carrying the guaranteed right to affordable housing portion in commercial districts. And I wanted to start just walking back and walking through how we got to where we're at and a look ahead at where we're going. So today, our restrictive growth policies that we're seeing across the state and across the country are actually rooted in a deeply racist history with land use and exclusionary zoning practices that were established, enacted, and enforced by our government to exclude Black, Brown, and Indigenous residents, primarily Black Minnesotans, from communities. Today, these policies continue to perpetuate segregated communities and drive economic, education, health, employment inequities, and perpetuate the racial wealth gaps and home ownership. And here's the thing, I said it before and I'll say it again, that we know that we are people who are limitless as a collective, and we just keep rising, adapting, and innovating. And even still, as state and local governments seek solutions to these challenges and barriers that were forced upon us by the government, our current patchwork approach is hurting all Minnesotans and our economy, not just those it was intended to harm the most. Multifamily housing is a critical part of our state's diverse housing stock. However, where zoning attempts to prevent traditional impacts among neighbors like noise or traffic, it often does so in a discriminatory way, solving the problem by shifting the burden to other communities, communities who have been marginalized and those who don't have as much political influence. It's why we often see multifamily, if permitted, relegated to a community's perimeter. Look at the maps in Minnesota, placing us at a distance from local amenities and services, segregating us from jobs and community members, effectively treating renters as second-class residents. And select cities and geographies should no longer be allowed in any corner of Minnesota to continue utilizing tools that were crafted as weapons with the explicit purpose of keeping some people out. Many communities have local policies that limit multifamily and the missing middle homes at a more affordable house price point. And this is actually a key driver of evictions, houselessness, and our housing shortage. Coded claims about how certain residents and the homes they live in may change the community character don't deserve regulatory deference or active state enforcement any longer. Contrary to some misconceptions, multifamily does not negatively affect property values, public schools, traffic, and in many ways, these actually see improvements across the board because of multi-unit family in our communities. And their anti-growth policies are actually hurting our most vulnerable neighbors, our neighbors who are most low income, and even those who have the most in-demand jobs like educators, nurses, and firefighters, and our young people who can no longer afford to buy or rent and live in the neighborhoods that they love. So, especially because multifamily can enhance the quality of life by ensuring families and elders and kids in their families can afford to live in their communities and go to work and school, have access to transit and amenities like fresh food and grocery stores. We know that multifamily is a powerful tool to increase density and to signal and stimulate economic growth. And that's why we're making it easier to develop mixed use and residential affordable housing with this bill. by helping communities innovate and placing guardrails on local zoning that seeks to exclude, we can enable cities to grow more sustainably while addressing housing affordability, rapidly expand our tax base, and tackle our rising racial gap in home ownership. We know this is not a partisan issue. We stood together at a press conference today in a bipartisan manner. Red and blue states from Washington to Montana have said yes in my backyard. In Montana, I'll note that it was led by a supermajority of Republicans. So together, we're coming together with common sense solutions to legalize more housing choice. And I will end with that for our projects where proposed residential development complies with existing zoning ordinances or subdivision regulations, our Minnesota communities will be much better served by front-loading public engagement and creating a proactive process that creates a more uniform process for developers across the state. Affordable housing projects already face unique perceptions, burdens in public perception, and an administrative design process at the local level would ensure projects comply with local regulations without forcing them through cycles of uncertainty and discretionary review that we know jeopardize critical housing developments in our communities. So these review processes have been implemented successfully in other states, and we can do that here in Minnesota while ensuring that our local governments and city staff have adequate time to review proposals for compliance. This plan allows all sorts of choice for cities to retain local character of housing and implement safeguards for things like safety and health that we know are so important. We recognize the immense expertise and knowledge and ingenuity that cities have in their communities. I'm a former city servant myself, and we'll be working closely with cities and counties in the development of this legislation as we move forward with our movement to guarantee affordable housing so that everybody in Minnesota has housing choice and the freedom to live a good life.
Thank you. Representative Kraft?
Yeah, I want to, one other remark. I want to actually, this is a bipartisan approach. I want to salute Representative Nash for his long work on this. We, at the presser this morning, there was supposed to be a Senate colleague of his on the Republican side there who couldn't make it at the last minute, and someone asked Senator Port, well, did you bring your Republican? And the point that I made is maybe it was Representative Nash that was bringing us along. This has been something he's been focused on for many years. So thank you for your partnership on this.
We're going to move to the authors testifiers, and I'm going to ask if our authors testifiers could keep it to about 3 minutes each. And first we have Kristen Incitti, followed by Nick Erickson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Howard, Vice Chair Agbaje, members of the committee, Representative Kraft, and Representative Kozlowski, for your leadership in this work and for the invitation to join you today to discuss the Affordable Housing Supply Workgroup and Habitat for Humanity of Minnesota's support of the Missing Middle Bill and the Make More Homes Initiative. My name is Kristen Incitti, and I'm the CEO of Habitat for Humanity of Minnesota. This past summer, Minnesota Housing Partnership and Habitat Minnesota convened a set of stakeholders to evaluate and consider land use reforms. Because while land use regulations play an important role in advancing health, safety, and community well-being, we have also seen how excessive zoning restrictions make it difficult to build affordable homes to meet local housing needs. Due to time, I won't be sharing slides or going through many details of the work we did, but you should have those slides available as part of today's materials, and a full report will be published soon. Based on the research and national peer conversations our stakeholder group had, we collectively call for statewide land use reform to address housing affordability and equity in Minnesota. As has been highlighted by others today, historically explicit racialized regulations such as redlining, racial covenants, and predatory lending practices prevented many from achieving homeownership, namely Black Americans and immigrants. These inequities are evident today in the form of staggering racial gaps in homeownership and wealth, with Minnesota having one of the largest racial gaps in the country. As this committee knows well, Minnesota is faced with severe housing shortage, and that is impacting affordability across the entire affordable housing continuum. In addition to contributing racial disparities, Minnesota's affordable housing shortages negatively impact economic opportunities in greater Minnesota. Increasing Minnesota's housing supply and diversifying the housing stock is imperative to expanding housing access and opportunity in Minnesota. to support the construction of more homes and creating a diverse housing stock that addresses the needs of communities across the entire continuum, Minnesota must make significant and sustained financial investments through direct appropriations and tax policies, and enable, incentivize, expedite, and increase the production of more homes, especially affordable homes, by enacting and enforcing statewide modernized land use and zoning laws. This includes expanding zoning to allow for construction of middle housing as defined in this bill, allowing multifamily housing by right as also included, and the density bonuses and other affordable housing supports noted in the full bill. Habitat Minnesota supports the efforts of both of these two bills to increase supply and the diversity of homes in our communities. Among other things, Habitat Minnesota specifically appreciates that this bill includes single-family homes in the definition of missing middle. Affordable starter homes are essential in having a strong middle class. It's key to creating thriving communities and ensuring household and workforce stability. As we continue this work, Habitat would like to see continued prioritization of racial equity. It will take intentional effort, racially aware policymaking, and more inclusive and equitable processes to design and pass policies that move us forward. We'd also like to see mechanisms to ensure that affordable homes produced through inclusionary zoning remain affordable long-term for subsequent households and home buyers, and that priority access to affordable units for families displaced or at risk of displacement is considered. In conclusion, zoning reforms that allow for diversity of housing types are necessary but not sufficient for ensuring that housing is accessible to people of color or even low-income households generally. Habitat Minnesota is committed to advocating for racially equitable land use policy. We are motivated by recognition of our collective responsibility and government's responsibility to undo the harmful effects of past and present land use policies that disadvantage Black, Indigenous, and people of color. We look forward to working with lawmakers to make sure the new homes created are affordable, accessible to low-income households, and that nonprofit homeownership providers are equitably able to build, repair, and preserve ownership opportunities. Housing is a continuum, and Habitat's mission is to create ownership and wealth-building opportunities. This bill expands housing choice and makes homes more affordable by allowing for more diverse housing types and accelerating review processes. Families cannot be ownership ready if they spend more than they can afford on rent or if they spend more on housing and transit costs because they cannot find rental housing in the communities where they work. Paired with Minnesota's historic investment in housing in 2023 and ongoing investments in home affordability, this is an opportunity to significantly increase the supply of housing. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Nick Erickson, and on deck, we have Cormasi Duard. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Nick Erickson, Senior Director of Housing Policy for Housing First Minnesota. I have to tell you, I'm honored and privileged to sit here today with Representative Kraft and a large group of advocates here to say yes to more housing in Minnesota. This bill is one that employs proven strategies to end housing affordability challenges. And as we heard last week in the this committee hearing, it's needed. Our housing ecosystem in Minnesota is in peril. And we can no longer rely on the status quo policies that got us here to solve this crisis. This bill before you today addresses Minnesota's housing challenges by legalizing more housing options, lifting affordability roadblocks, ending exclusionary zoning, and places people in charge of their own housing decisions. A recent study found that legalizing more housing options and reducing barriers to the construction of affordably priced housing increased housing inventory, it combated housing inflation and reduced homelessness. This is not a story of some mythical city, but it's right here in Minnesota, in Minneapolis. We asked American Enterprise Institute's Housing Center to run some numbers on the proposal that we're hearing today. And what they found is that new infill housing in the Twin Cities would be available at about 380 to 390,000 median price point. Today, it's 550 to build a new single-family home here in the Twin Cities from a median price perspective. That price point reduction opens up homeownership opportunities to more than 2,000 Minnesotans who today are fighting over an undersupplied existing home market. For established communities, this bill will unleash new development opportunities that will deliver new units at lower prices. For our growing communities, this bill will create more flexibility and predictability, and most importantly, return needed missing middle housing to this market. Across Minnesota, this bill can increase housing affordability and access near job centers where it's needed most. And for those few visionary cities who have stepped up to meet the moment, this bill ensures that they alone do not bear the burden of solving our state's housing crisis. Now, this is one of several bills that will be before you this session that will help us solve our state's housing challenges. And I ask you at every step along the way, if it increases affordability and inventory, a vote yes is what's required. Do not add any new barriers this session. Finally, I'm asking you today to vote yes, because it's a vote to legalize needed new housing in Minnesota, and it ends exclusionary zoning. A vote yes opens homeownership opportunities to more Minnesotans, helping them to build generational wealth. And finally, a vote yes ensures your children and grandchildren have a future here in Minnesota. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Kormasi Duard. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, Chair Howard and members of the committee. My name is Kamasa Deward. I'm a member of SEIU. Our union represents over 50 million healthcare workers. We work in hospitals, clinics, nursing homes, and home care for over a dozen years. I've worked in long-term nursing home care, and also has a PCA. I know firsthand how hard it is to find affordable housing. I know how there's few options for people with less money. We need to build an abundant supply of housing so that everyone can find the kind of housing that they can afford. This bill will help build more homes for workers. A few years ago, I went through a crisis. I lived in Oakdale in a two-bedroom place, and I paid $1,500 a month. $1,050 a month. It was extremely crowded for my five children and myself. But that's all I could afford. Then two hard blows hit my family. I lost my PCA, my main PCA client, and I also lost my income. And I also lost the assistance with the COVID housing assistance. I tried to find other options, but there was nothing available for less than $1,500. The next few years was awful. I spent much of my time living in my Jeep with my five children. We would park overnight in various locations, and they would try to go to school as I go to work. Sometimes we didn't even have enough money for food. I would get enough money to afford to take my children myself to a hotel, but I would have to sneak my children in because my family was too big to go into a one-bedroom hotel room. I would have to decide between feeding my children or spending money to run my Jeep. Eventually, I got some extra financial assistance from families, and I got a PCA job. So now we're actually living in a better place. The worst part was watching my children struggle through school. We didn't have stable housing, and I felt like a failure as a parent. This bill would make it legal to build more housing in Oakdale and most cities. Most of the land is currently reserved for single family homes. Only a tiny fraction of it is available for duplexes and other types of housing. I understand that a lot of people would like a big house and a big yard. That's my dream too. But we should not only have to be the only kind of housing when you're struggling. You will want a roof, some walls. You will also want stable housing and a safe place. It would be legal everywhere to build places like this. It would help people like me to have more option, it won't hurt anyone. This helps workers. My union supports similar reform in Minneapolis and St. Paul. More housing in Minneapolis, lower rent throughout the metro area. This is huge pay increase for our members. This will put more money in our pockets of workers. Thank you.
Kumasi, thank you very much. Thank you. Sorry, let's keep. So we're going to proceed to public testimony. For our public testifiers, you'll each have 2 minutes. My CA, Jack Dockendorf, will have a timer. If you hear the timer go off, please finish that sentence, and then we'll proceed. First, we have Daniel Lightfoot, and on deck, Ann Mavity. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Daniel Lightfoot, and I am one of the Intergovernmental Relations Representatives at the League of Minnesota Cities. The League represents the collective interests of 838 member cities in the state of Minnesota. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today. Provisions in the bill broadly preempt city zoning and land use authorities, remove public input in the residential development process, and lack consideration generally for how cities utilize zoning and land use to ensure public safety, health, welfare, and finance and scale public infrastructure to support new housing density. Beyond the basic premise of stripping local control from decisions around residential development in individual communities, there are things that are functionally wrong with this bill currently and pose questions about how certain provisions contradict and how cities could continue to ensure public health, safety, and welfare of residents. Those specific things are outlined in a joint city letter in your packets. We have been in conversations with Chair Howard and the authors, Representative Kraft and Representative Kozlowski, as well as members of this committee, and we do appreciate that the DE amendment includes addresses several of the functional issues that we've pointed out, and we also appreciate the exception of cities below 5,000 in population from certain requirements in this bill. However, we do remain concerned that the bill creates an overly broad and rigid framework for something as hyper-local as zoning, while mandating density regardless of infrastructure capacity with no mechanism for a city to pay for that or for a city to reasonably plan for increasing infrastructure capacity to support that new level of density. The prohibition of public hearings on most development projects, even for residents who are directly impacted by a new development, among other strict limitations and prohibitions are concerning. That said, we do look forward to continuing conversations with this committee and the authors of the bill, and we appreciate the opportunity to testify today. With me are a few city officials as well who provide their perspectives. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Thank you. Next, we have Ann Mavity, and on deck, Bradley Peterson. Welcome back to the committee.
Thank you so much. My name is Ann Mavity. I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota Housing Partnership. I appreciate the opportunity to come back here, and I appreciate the leadership of the authors of this proposal. I'm coming here today, I've seen you before, I'm coming here today to also bring the experience I've had for the last 20 years in financing affordable and supportive housing, in leading development with a nonprofit on affordable and supportive housing, and also as a city council member for almost three terms in St. Louis Park, served with my former colleague, Representative Kraft, as a city council member in St. Louis Park, helping drive city council policy. I served on the Metro Cities Board, was actually chair of the Metro Cities Board, and I served on the League of Minnesota Cities Board. And so I appreciate certainly these perspectives. And what I know is that status quo has not allowed us to achieve the affordable housing that we need. So we have a diverse coalition right now from business to healthcare, labor unions, housing organizations across the continuum that have said, we have policy goals and strategies to create more housing. This legislature and leaders across the state have put in thoughtful, methodical strategies, goals, and funding to create more housing. And we've seen that around the state at the local level as well. the increase in local housing trust funds across the state, where communities are saying housing is a critical issue for our local communities. They're putting money there, and still we cannot solve for our affordable housing challenge. What's happening is that we are fighting project by project, 30 units at a time, to create more housing, when actually we have more than 100,000 new homes that we need, and we cannot be fighting that 30 units at a time. And so what I am testifying in support of this bill, because we need additional barriers removed to allow the market and allow local communities to create the housing that they need and to remove these barriers. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Bradley Peterson with the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities, and on deck is Steve Gottwald with the Central Minnesota Builders Association. Mr. Peterson, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, my name is Bradley Peterson. I'm with the firm of Flaherty and Hood here in St. Paul, representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. Our city officials across the state are working hard and diligently to build more housing in their communities. As one city official put it to me a couple of years ago, we are falling over ourselves to try to build more housing. Yet these same city officials strongly oppose this bill, and that's the message that I am here to give you. The substitution of the legislature's judgment over that of local on-the-ground elected officials, utility operators, and planning professionals skates past the real complexity of implementing legislation such as this. I found actually particularly compelling the letter submitted by the City Engineers Association of Minnesota. If you don't read anything else, read that fourth paragraph on the infrastructure challenges that this will create. These are the experts on the ground. They should be listened to. As we talk to our own city folks who work in utilities, just upsizing density in a neighborhood can definitely put a strain on the local electric load and local electric system. As one of our utility operators put it, it would be very difficult, because if we have to swap out a transformer, that's an 18-month lead time to get a new transformer. And those are built here in the U.S. of A. And so there are definitely very, very strong infrastructure problems with this bill that need to be addressed, in addition to just the local control issues. We share the league's concern over the local input impacts of this and taking the role of city councils and citizens out of it. I was especially interested to hear the comments around farmland preservation. This bill has a gaping hole in it. If you want to preserve farmland, prevent sprawl in greater Minnesota, then this bill would need to address residential development in townships. It's a hole that you've got. So with that, we're opposed to this, but we will certainly continue to work towards these laudable goals that you're trying to accomplish.
Thank you. Next, we have Mr. Gottwald, and on deck, Evan Vogel, City Administrator with the City of Cambridge. Welcome to the committee from Representative Gottwald. Welcome back.
Good afternoon, Chair Howard. Very good to see you. Thanks for coming up to St. Cloud and talking about housing issues, too. We really appreciated that. And I want to take a moment to thank Representative Kraft and Representative Koslowski for their good work on this. You know, this points out this is bipartisan. This is not a partisan issue. Housing is a need across the state. I'm here representing the Central Minnesota Builders Association. So Greater Minnesota has these challenges too. If you think this is just a metro area problem, it is not. All of our cities are dealing with this. I would point out our mayor in St. Cloud is supporting this. He's enthusiastically in support of this approach because he realizes we need to do more. What we've been doing, it's the old definition of insanity, expecting different results from doing the same thing over and over again. And I know many communities are trying to do their part. God bless them for that. But we need more. And it seems it's time for the state to step in and do some of this. So I'm here representing the Central Minnesota Builders Association. We represent nearly 300 area developers, builders, contractors, and associated service providers in the greater St. Cloud area. And we enthusiastically support passage of House File 4009. Housing affordability and access are two critical issues facing our area and our state. Just to give you an example, we have major employers, CentraCare Health System, and some of the other major employers in St. Cloud that can't find affordable places for their workers to live. This is a huge issue. So that's your healthcare system, that's your economic development, that's your tax base. And they've decided to come together. They're holding a meeting March 22nd with community leaders to talk about How do we put ourselves forward and start addressing this issue? This bill will help. It's very helpful. This bill, as has been mentioned, legalizes missing middle housing, new starter homes in Minnesota. We've mentioned we're 100,000 units of housing behind. Now, some of what was passed last year helps get at some of that, but because it's a growing problem, you know, we're plateauing. We're not solving the problem. The bill lifts barriers that hamper new housing by banning exclusionary policies, lifting unfunded mandates. That's huge. We've got to do something different. The bill adds to housing choices and strengthens property rights by allowing property owners, not the government, to select housing options and amenities. Again, the Central Minnesota Builders Association urges you to support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Evan Vogel with the City of Cambridge, and after that, Councilmember Ben Whalen. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Vogel.
Thank you, Chair Howard. I'm going to have to try and talk fast. Good afternoon, Chair Howard and committee members. My name is Evan Vogel, and I'm the City Administrator for the City of Cambridge, a board member of the League of Minnesota Cities Board of Directors, and I'm also representing the Coalition of Greater Minnesota Cities. I think that we can all agree that a lack of affordable housing is an issue. Access to affordable housing and home ownership is a significant component of the social contract, the American dream. Cities are in a unique position to encourage the development of diverse housing options that are reflective of their community's needs and wants. House File 4009 is not the answer to address the affordable housing issue. It resorts to unprecedented zoning preemption instead of seeking to provide incentives, blanket mandates instead of allowing for local solutions. It forces communities to uniform standards and removes citizens' ability to appeal to their locally elected leaders to voice concerns and help shape their community. It does all of this without any inclusion of market restrictions that may actually lead to affordable housing solutions to the end user. I'd like to focus on two specific provisions within House File 4009 that are especially problematic. Section 2 requires cities to allow increased density by right, forcing cities in my part of the state to accommodate between 2 and 8 units per lot, while limiting parking minimums to 1 per residential unit, setting minimum lot requirements at 4,000 square feet, and limiting the number of square footage requirements for dwellings, regardless of the number of units. In the City of Cambridge, there are 3,059 residential units. In just the last 5 years, the city has worked with several developers to explore smaller lots and provide tax increment financing for the creation of 525 apartment units that range from deeply affordable to workforce housing. Additionally, along with developer partners, the city has added or is in the process of adding hundreds of single-family housing units on lots smaller than those traditionally allowed by the zoning code. These solutions work because the city council listened to the needs of their residents and responded with community-specific solutions. Development ought to be organically reflective of the needs and wants of the community rather than be driven by blanket state mandates. These projects were located in places with adequate infrastructure and made sense at the present time. That should not prescribe the action the city must take tomorrow. I urge members to oppose House File 4009 and any other attempts at broad preemption of municipal zoning authority. Thank you for allowing me this opportunity to testify.
Thank you. Next, we have Councilmember Ben Whalen, and after that, Councilmember Aaron Berg from Cambridge. Welcome to the committee.
Hello, and thank you for welcoming me. My name is Ben Whalen. I'm a city council member for the City of Richfield. I'm here today asking for your support of the missing middle housing bill. Richfield faces the same housing pressures as the rest of our state, rising costs and limited supply. When I first moved to Richfield, my wife and I wanted to rent a duplex, and there were only 2 available in the whole city of 35,000 people. These last couple of years, Richfield has changed our local zoning code to allow ADUs and duplexes across our whole city, precisely to open up more housing options for our community. We've lowered parking requirements and minimum lot sizes to try and reduce housing costs, but one city cannot solve a regional housing crisis on our own. It takes the whole state working together. This year, we as a city are asking the legislature to change the zoning code statewide to allow duplexes by right. We also support resources and incentives for affordable housing, as well as climate-friendly housing, which are built into this precise bill. Of course, we are wary any time state legislators talk about overriding local control, but in this case, we see the need and the potential benefit all around us. In our firefighter who bought an affordable townhome in Richfield so he could live in the community that he serves. In my neighbor whose duplex allows their adult son with a disability the right balance of independence and support. and in myself several years ago looking for a new community home in an affordable way. Detractors may tell us to be afraid, but this bill is simply about opening up all our communities to anyone who would call them home, regardless of how much money they make or the makeup of their family. Thank you for working to make more homes possible throughout our state. I urge your support.
Thank you. Next, we have Councilmember Aaron Berg and on deck, Elliot Elfbaum. Councilmember, welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Howard, members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today on the proposed bill. Each of you have a wide variety of decisions to make and cannot possibly have all the information or anticipate how this bill may impact our citizens. My name is Aaron Berg, and I've had the opportunity, I have the unique perspective to address this bill and its provisions from three key stakeholder positions, that of a former city planning commissioner, a community development director, and an elected member of the Cambridge City Council. While on the Cambridge Planning Commission, I took pride in the process of reviewing land use and zoning applications. I saw our commission as a representative litmus test of the community standards, whereby public hearing and subsequent discussion led to a community-based recommendation in which our council could count on when it was time to make the final decision. This bill, if passed in this form, robs communities from utilizing citizen input to determine certain development standards in their communities. As a community development director for the city of East Bethel, I am charged with not only land use, planning, and zoning, but also the community's vision in the form of the long-term comprehensive plan. As you may know, major cities across the seven-county metropolitan area are obligated by state statute to already have density standards, which are defined within their long-term comprehensive plans. These communities have been diligently working towards density standards and do not need another added level of complexity that alters existing plans. Embarking on long-term comprehensive plan and zoning amendments for smaller cities is arduous, expensive, and time-consuming. Additionally, the established long-term comprehensive plan and subsequent amendments are already scrutinized, reviewed, and approved by the Metropolitan Council. Lastly, I want to leave you today with my perspective as an elected member of the Cambridge City Council. I am not speaking for the entire council. However, as someone who was elected by and represents nearly 10,500 residents of the city of Cambridge, it is my opinion that this bill, if passed in this form, is clearly an example of state government overreach disguised as responsible government. I know that our communities can have and will continue to work towards addressing the housing needs of our citizens in greater Minnesota. We do not need another layer of state agency complexity to impose on our residents, landowners, and future developers.
Please wrap up, Councilmember.
Yep, I strongly urge members of the committee to oppose this bill.
Thank you. Next, we have Elliot Altbaum with Isaiah, and on deck, Scott McMahon with Greater Minnesota Partnership. Mr. Altbaum, welcome to the committee.
Hello, my name is Elliot Altbaum. Thank you, Committee Chair Howard and committee members. I am an organizer for the Young Adult Coalition at Isaiah. And we all really need dignified homes that are affordable and meet our needs, and we've already heard so much about that. But we haven't been able to get there because for too long we've had exclusionary politics and exclusionary policies that have meant too many renters that I know can't afford a place to live, and it's too many families that can't afford to buy a home in our state. I was lucky enough to recently purchase a duplex with my close friends, and really the only way that one of the only ways we could do that was because it was a duplex and we could share the cost. If we want, it does mean though, for me this is a good thing, but maybe for others, I do get the 7 a.m. visits from their two-year-old, and it does also mean I get to be the extra childcare on hand when there's a crisis, and it means that like we get to have a better and bigger definition of what community means. So in the last, I think, month, I've had three different people approach me from totally different parts of my life asking about the duplex life. And to me, it is so clear that there is a deep hunger and need for more housing in our state and more kinds of housing to make families and homes possible. That's not to mention the hundreds of conversations I've had with other young people and renters across the cities who are just desperate for any kind of housing that they can afford that is dignified and meets their needs. So I urge you to legalize homes so that all people who want to call Minnesota home can find a home they can afford and meet their needs. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Scott McMahon on deck, Paul Egger. Welcome to the committee.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity to testify on this bill. My name is Scott McMahon with the Greater Minnesota Partnership. We share the goal of everyone in this room today. We need more housing in all corners of the state. But I come here today to remind the committee that the housing markets we face in Greater Minnesota are substantially different than the housing markets that exist in the Twin Cities, especially the suburbs. Our ask of this committee is that while you work on policies to promote the construction of new housing in the state, that you don't enact policies that have a net positive impact in one part of the state and a net negative impact in another. Unfortunately, as the bill stands today, this goal is not achieved. You have a handout in your package that describes the housing reality that we face in communities across Greater Minnesota. And it is summed up by this: the cost to produce a new unit of housing, not the market value of the property, but just the construction cost, is greater than what the property will appraise at once it's complete. Greater Minnesota is a classic example of market failure, and our market failure begins with the construction of public infrastructure. I recently met with one of our mayors in northern Minnesota who shared with me that they are working on building out new public infrastructure to support the potential development of some new, much-needed single-family housing. It will cost them $80,000 per lot to develop the infrastructure, and they expect to be able to sell it to the developer for $17,000, a loss to that community of $63,000. This is where market failure begins and continues from there. Under this bill, the city will need to assume that a developer, by right, can build up to 4 housing units on a lot, or up to 8 in a newly required commercial zone. As a result, the city will need to build infrastructure to support what the developer is allowed to build. This will increase the cost for housing in a community at a density level that simply will not materialize in Greater Minnesota. Under the provision beginning on 9/30, if an affordable housing unit is demolished, at least an equal number of affordable housing units must be built in order to have a market rate housing built. Right now, there are 30 homes for sale in Windom, Minnesota. 28 of those homes list for under $250,000, and 5 are listed for under $100,000. Windom does not need any new affordable housing. Windom needs new market rate, which they can't build that additional unit market rate without building a unit of housing that they do not need.
Thank you. Paul Egger is next, and on deck is Julie Wishnack. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Paul Egger. I'm Senior Vice President of Governmental Affairs for the Minnesota Realtors Association. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify today in support of Representative Kraft's House File 4009, the Missing Middle Housing Bill. At your first committee meeting last week, you heard several presentations, including one from me, providing you with a variety of data points that underscore the importance of the discussion today on Representative Kraft's bill. Simply put, we have low supply and high demand, and that's leading to rising housing prices. Many of the issues in House File 4009 have been subjects of research and discussion dating back years. In August of 2021, the Star Tribune ran an in-depth article titled "How Twin Cities Housing Rules Keep the Metro Segregated." Among the considerable amount of data presented in that article are the following: at least 73% of residential land in the Twin Cities is governed by local zoning ordinances that only allow single-family detached homes. More than 65% of the land where only single-family homes can be built require a minimum lot size of 1/4 acre or more. And about 10% of residential land in the Twin Cities allows for more modest cost housing, such as duplexes, triplexes, townhomes, or mobile homes, the missing middle housing. More recently, the Minneapolis Fed put out an article in August of this year on waning housing affordability, imperiling economic growth. They said, quote, "Better housing policies can unleash the private market to build more housing at all price levels." And, quote, "A housing agenda bigger than subsidy alone looks like addressing the overly restrictive land use policies, time-consuming development processes, and onerous regulations that can derail sound housing projects before they get underway. This bill addresses barriers to building more housing and would result in the construction of more housing and more types of housing by the private sector to help meet future our current and future demand. This is a complex bill, and we look forward to gaining a better understanding of all provisions, such as the affordable housing replacement provision, as the bill and the discussion progresses. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the time today, and thank you to the authors and to the supporters of this legislation. As the bill moves forward, we're happy to work with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Julie Wishnack, and on deck, Bradley Shapey. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair, excuse me, and members of the committee. My name is Julie Wishnack. I'm the Community Development Director for the City of Minnetonka. I am testifying in behalf of the League of Minnesota Cities, the Metro Cities, and the Municipal Legislative Commission. And they all represent the collective interests of cities across the state, including our own. I want to thank you for the opportunity to testify about this bill. I do believe the bill is well-intentioned. I don't think anybody here thinks that we don't have a housing crisis in Minnesota. We absolutely do. However, there are some provisions in the bill that broadly preempt the city's zoning and land use authorities and, frankly, remove public input into the residential development process. The lack of consideration about how cities utilize zoning and land use to ensure public health, safety, and welfare, and also how we finance and scale public infrastructure projects to support that new density. The bill in requiring cities to accept 2 to 10 units per lot by right, regardless of the lot size and depending on the city and certain conditions, hinders cities like Minnetonka the ability to do their robust planning work. I think that it's nuanced and we have to be responsive to local conditions to accommodate the new density and scale of infrastructure needed to support that density. We've been doing that for years. We've been doing comprehensive planning and taking that community input while we do that planning work. We also appreciate the exception language in Subdivision 17. We're a city that leads on environmental protection, and so we are very concerned about the lack of geography or infrastructure capacity considerations. Because of those considerations, how we plan for density and ensuring that adequate infrastructure support, it's concerning that the legislation is actually silent to how the controlling comprehensive plan density allowances are addressed. Minnetonka has been a leader on density. We appreciate the work of the committee. We would be happy to collaborate and have future discussions. Thank you very much, Chair.
Thank you. Next, we have Bradley Shapey and on deck, Sarah Larson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you for having me, Chair and committee. My name is Bradley Shapey, and I'm a real estate attorney. I'm not a lobbyist here today, speaking on myself as an individual. I'm a former Minnetonka City Council member. Say hello to my colleague or former colleague who just presented. I offer a different perspective, which is I do agree with the comment before that we have systemic impediments. A word I often used in City Council was friction. There is so much friction into the process for anything other than a single family home, including Minnetonka. And what that means is that it's incredibly taxing on council members who I would argue their primary job now is refereeing land use decisions, not addressing perhaps homelessness or youth needs, but just truly refereeing land use decisions. And that I would say is the primary reason I did not run for reelection last year is I frankly, with my life and my kids and my business, I don't have time. I can't do the job of having what you see with applicants where they do, in Minnetonka, you'll have concept review, you'll have planning commission, you'll have city council. A recent project had 2 planning commissions, 4 city councils, city mediation, and it took 15 months, and the applicant spent over $400,000. What we're also not talking about is not just historic segregation, but segregation of housing within cities. That's what Minnetonka does. If you want new rental housing, you have to live basically in the Ridgedale area or the Opus area. So you can't actually have new affordable housing in anywhere other than those locations. However, a recent statistically significant survey of Minnetonka residents confirmed that on a 2-to-1 basis, our own residents do support more housing on our corridors and activity centers. And why that's interesting is because they asked, the question was specific. Well, we'll leave it at that, but I appreciate your time, and I really hope we can find some compromise in a bill. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd love you to email some of those specifics to the committee. I'm really interested. Sorry, we don't have time. Sarah Larson, you're up next. And then after that, we have Connor Carroll. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard and committee members. My name is Sarah Larson. I'm a principal at Landon Group. Landon Group is a consultant that works exclusively with affordable housing developers. Since 2012, we have been or are involved with the development or rehab of nearly 7,000 units throughout the state. Creating affordable housing is hard. The challenge of having adequate financing is well known, and the provision of resources at a historic level by this legislature was important, so thank you. But the funding alone does not mean the units are going to be built. We are involved in a development that obtained state resources in the last funding round awarded in December, as well as federal tax credits. The project complied, as submitted, with the city's comprehensive plan for use and density. However, the city process is set up in a way that requires multiple public hearings, multiple land use applications, and a zoning change to a planned unit development, which gives the city significant discretion in final approvals. As a result, the developer has now redesigned the site, they've reduced the density and height to result in fewer units, and they're engaging in a lengthy process to develop consensus. These actions are costing time and money, and the outcome is uncertain, jeopardizing these federal resources. This is not a unique story. In my career, I can think of several developments that fell apart simply because of land use approvals, all in different cities throughout the state. I can think of several that only happened after costly and lengthy organizing as well as legal efforts. And there are a dozen of others that have required significant changes. Finally, every year we advise on average at least three developers that they ought not to pursue their project because it's unlikely they'll obtain approvals. If you look at zoning maps and zoning codes across the state, you will find few that allow multifamily apartment buildings of a scale that affordable housing finance requires by right. Most cities have parameters designed to provide complete discretion and approval. There are almost always uncertainties in the outcome by design. The appetite for affordable housing in different communities is uneven, so it's no surprise that land use approvals are uneven as well. The proposed legislation will not shut out the local government. It will ensure there's a chance to build affordable housing everywhere because it's needed everywhere.
Thank you. Next, we have Connor Carroll, and after that, Anna Morrison.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard and committee. My name is Connor Carroll. I live in South Minneapolis, and I grew up in Rosemount. I'm here in support of this bill, and I'd like to tell you why. Last weekend, I was visiting family in Rosemount, and I stayed at my parents' house for a couple days. I had been reading a bit about this bill a few days before, and as I was walking and driving around town that weekend, I noticed there are mostly two kinds of places where people are living in Rosemount. There are a handful of large apartment buildings in the town center, and pretty much everywhere else are detached single-family houses. I've been a renter in Minneapolis now for about 8 years, so it was kind of jarring not to see the duplexes and triplexes, small two-story apartment buildings, like the one that I live in currently and see all over the place. I got curious and started looking online at rental prices in Rosemount. One-bedroom apartments in the town center range from about $1,600 to $2,300 a month, and renting a house costs anywhere from $2,000 to $4,000 a month. Contrast this with Minneapolis, where it's pretty easy to find one- and two-bedroom apartments in duplexes, fourplexes, et cetera, from $900 to $1,500 a month. In the current state, I think there are probably people and families in Rosemount who are reluctantly leaving the community because it's hard to find the right combination of space and price, and I don't want my family and friends who live in Rosemount to have to make that choice. By making it easier to build middle housing in more places, suburbs like Rosemount could give more affordable options, give people more affordable options than they have today, allowing them to find housing that's right for their unique needs within their budget and in the town or city where they're from. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Anna Morrison, and on deck, Andrea Reel. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Howard and members of the committee. I slipped onto the list with my maiden name, so I'll introduce myself correctly. I'm Anna Nelson. I'm here with Neighbors for More Neighbors and testifying in support of this bill. My husband grew up in Le Sueur near Mankato, and he talks a lot about his childhood of riding bikes everywhere. He rode bikes to his friends' houses, to school, and regularly to the store to buy treats. When it came time to find our own home, that's the kind of walkable neighborhood that we wanted to live in, one where our kids could have a little more freedom, where we could maybe walk around the corner to get a coffee or to the grocery store, one that maybe if we're lucky had a pharmacy, had a school, had jobs that were in that same walkable community. However, we live in the Twin Cities, and we realized pretty quickly that that type of walkable neighborhood is really hard to find. It's also very sought after and very expensive. And talking to many other people, a number of my friends said, yeah, I'd love that too. But, you know, cost or lack of options ended up meaning they were living in a more car-dependent life. We're lucky. We found our home. I actually live in a missing middle development, a series of row houses. I share walls on either side of my neighbors, which actually appeals to me for environmental reasons. We are using a lot less energy, and so are my neighbors, by having shared walls. I often run into those neighbors on foot at the playground or one of the many local businesses around the corner. When you have so many people living close together and close to businesses, it's really easy for local businesses to make it. They've got a built-in crowd of customers right around the corner. And it's really easy to end up going there all the time when it's that convenient. Same goes for transit. When you have a lot of people living close together along bus lines, it's a lot more sustainable to run those buses more often. And you are more likely to try hopping on a bus if it comes every 10 minutes than once an hour. I just want this for everyone in Minnesota.
Thank you. Next, we have Andrea Reel, and on deck, Britt Unbakhti. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Chair Howard and members of the committee, my name is Andrea Reel, and I'm a volunteer with Neighbors Former Neighbors, and I'm here today supporting this bill because Minnesotans need more housing options to fit different times in their lives. I first moved to Minnesota in 2017, so I'm a new Minnesotan. And I came here from out of state specifically looking for a duplex or triplex to rent with my small family and our dog. We wanted to spend our weekends exploring the state and not cutting our grass. We found a great place, but it took me nearly 4 months to find that place. We settled in and have found a lot to love about Minnesota. We again entered the housing market in 2022 when our landlord decided to sell the duplex. We'd hoped to strike gold and find another great duplex that we loved, but that was not to be. We ended up purchasing a single-family home because our options were so limited. And while we love our home, I think often about how limited those choices were and how much yard work I still have to do. As my parents age, I know that they're going to be facing these same barriers and choices in finding homes that are right for them at the different ages and stages of their lives. I'm worried that my mom will have to find a house that will work for her. She'll have to leave her community, her friends, the relationship she's built in the neighborhood she's lived in for 30 years, because the other options don't exist in her neighborhood. To me, this bill is really about ensuring that Minnesotans have options for every stage of life, no matter where they live. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Britt Unbakhti, and on deck, Zach Yudishtu. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Hello, Chair Howard and members of the committee. My name is Britt Unbakht. I use they, them pronouns. I'm a policy volunteer with Neighbors for Neighbors. I'm testifying today in support of Representative Kraft's missing middle housing bill because Minnesotans need more homes of all kinds. Around the time that the Fair Housing Act was passed in 1968, many cities changed their zoning codes to exclude housing types that were common at the time, like duplexes and other small apartments that we've been talking about today. This had the effect of segregating communities and excluding brown, black, white, and indigenous people who could not afford or were denied a mortgage on a single family home. The home shortage we are now living in is the direct result of the seeds of inequity that cities planted by making multiple homes on one lot illegal. The good news is that we don't have to continue these mistakes from the past. 5+ years of effort by the city of Minneapolis and by people, neighbors who live here, have created good outcomes here. According to Pew Research, the recent changes in Minneapolis to allow more homes and more places has kept our rent increases to just 1% over the last 5 years during the largest inflationary time period in my lifetime. The average across Minnesota was 14%, and the national average increase in rent over the same period is 31%. More homes means lower housing costs. More homes means an increase in tax bases for cities, and more homes means more construction workers can have a full-time job. Representative Kraft's bill will level the playing field so that all cities have to allow at least 2 homes on a lot and will help all Minnesotans to find a home that works for them.
Thank you. Up next, we have Zach Yudishtu, and then our last testifier is Katie Nicholson.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Hello, Chair Howard. I'm Zach Adishtu, and I'm the Housing Advocacy Coordinator for Sustain St. Paul. We're an organization that champions abundant housing, low-carbon transportation, and sustainable land use. And I'm here today to voice our support on this bill to allow more housing types across Minnesota. One of the many reasons we're supporting this bill is to increase economic opportunity for more Minnesotans. Many of my peers and neighbors have struggled to afford housing near the areas where they need to work and live. As a result, they're forced to endure long commutes, to buy a house, or to overcrowd in small units just so they can make rent. Even worse, these challenges can altogether prevent people from working good jobs or accessing opportunities. This affects all kinds of people in my community: teachers, college students, service workers, and many more. By allowing more affordable types of housing and more places, from affordable starter single-family homes to duplexes and ADUs to other apartments near transit and in commercial areas, we can give our neighbors more flexibility and access to live in the neighborhoods that make sense for them. That's why I'm excited to be supporting this bill. Thank you.
Thank you. And last but not least, Katie Nicholson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair, members of the committee. Good afternoon. My name is Katie Nicholson. I live in St. Paul, grew up in Burnsville, and I am here to testify in favor of HF 4009. Here in Minnesota, we are very fortunate to maintain a lower cost of living in comparison to much of the United States right now, but there's still a lot of work to be done. If we are to maintain this lower cost of living, we must continue to build housing aggressively in our cities and our suburbs. By increasing density, we increase the efficiency of city services. Social services get more funding. We increase ridership on public transportation. People can continue to afford their homes. There's so much good that can come from the simple addition of density. Our cities and suburbs have already started increasing density, particularly around transit stations, but past projects were held back from being as good as they could have been due to antiquated zoning and parking requirements. It doesn't have to stay this way. The rules were set, but not in stone. The only thing I would recommend amending is expanding major transit stops to include our high-frequency bus networks in the Twin Cities and statewide, not just our bus rapid transit and rail networks here in the Twin Cities. Other than that, I strongly urge passing HF 4009 so that Minnesota may continue to flourish and remain affordable for those who call it home and the others who wish to make a home here. Thank you.
Thank you, and thank you to all the testifiers. We are now going to move to amendments to the DE, and I believe, Lee Johnson, you have the A6. Would you, you'd like to move and describe the A6 amendment?
Chair Howard, member, I want to wish to move the A6 amendment. What the A6 amendment does is changes things a little bit to help the smaller communities in our state. While there's 854 cities in the state, the vast majority of them are small cities that do their best. Some of them do their best just to survive. So what this does is changes the number from 5,000 population to 10,000. The vast majority of our cities, about 90%, are under a 10,000 population, and most of them are doing everything they can to grow and to provide things that are community needs. As some of the things were brought up with the infrastructure needs, those cities are struggling just to keep up with what they have, and it could be a lot of stress on them if the way the bill currently is would go through. So I ask that members support the A6.
Representative Kraft.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair Howard, Representative Johnson. So I'm going to view this as a friendly amendment. I understand the point there, and I think it makes sense to extend this the number from 5,000 to 10,000. We still will be requiring duplexes and ADUs be supported on all lots, which I think makes sense. But with that, I would urge a yes vote.
Not seeing any other hands up, I'll call for the vote on the A6. All those in favor of the A6 say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed? The A6 is adopted. Next, we'll take up the A8 amendment. I believe Representative Myers is, you'll be offering the A8?
Yes, Chair. So what the A8 amendment does is it just takes the effective date for density within cities of the second and third class out to July 1st, 2026, so hopefully you will consider that.
Representative Kraft.
Representative Chair Howard and Representative Myers, thank you for this. Yes, given that this is for, it also would apply to the cities under 10,000, so it would be cities of the fourth class. So given that they're smaller, may not have the same amount of resources, I think we should accept this, so I'd urge a yes vote.
Not seeing anyone else, I'll just move for the vote on the 8-8. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The 8-8 is adopted. Next, we have the A9. I believe that's Lee Johnson again.
Chair Howard, members, the A9 is very similar to the A6 that was passed. This bill still needs some work, and it's some things to think about. So as it moves forward, I hope we can work on this some more and make this bill better to address some of the concerns that some of the cities have. So, but I am going to withdraw the amendment.
The A9 has been withdrawn. Next, the A10 amendment. Representative Myers, will you be offering the A10?
Yes, thank you, Chair. Representative Kraft, I first just want to say thank you for, you know, having a phone call with me this weekend. You know, you always make yourself available. And that was really important because, you know, I got a lot of feedback over the weekend. And I'm offering the A10 amendment, which was brought to the concern of, you know, a district like mine that has 11 small cities and, you know, other cities around the state. So what this does is that it would exempt cities of the fourth class from this proposal. And the reason I'm bringing this is, you know, I was a former city council member in my district. I was a planning chair. In my district, and probably a lot of districts, have challenges with infrastructure. You know, we have pretty much every one of my cities, I think other one, have issues with water, sewer. And this is going to, I believe, increase those demands for infrastructure. And it's something I want to be very mindful of. There's also concerns regarding stormwater management in and around Lake Minnetonka. I think we heard some as far as public safety. We also have access to water issues out where we're at. And then, you know, a lot of my streets are very narrow. You know, if you drive around there, the streets aren't curb and gutter like a lot of the suburbs that you've seen. They're very narrow streets. You know, I have elected leaders. I have members of my community that have reached out and have recently either done comp plan amendments. They've updated their comp plans, and they're feeling the frustration that this is overreach because they've held a lot of public hearings. They've spent a lot of money on this to address certain things that they think that they need to address. And I think this is putting those small cities that have less capacity in a tougher situation. So I'm asking you to be able to support this amendment.
Representative Kraft.
Chair Howard, Representative Myers, thank you for the amendment. And I understand what is behind it, and I'm very willing to continue to speak on this. But it's a pretty complex amendment. There's lots of things happening in it that I think some might go at odds with the purpose of this bill. So at this point, I'm going to ask for a no vote on the amendment, but I'm willing to continue to talk to you about some of the things behind it.
Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. You know, and I appreciate that, and I hope we can have more conversations. I do appreciate the movement from when we even spoke. I don't know if it was Saturday or Sunday. My kids were screaming too loud when we were talking. But hopefully we can, you know, continue to have these conversations.
So I will call the vote on the A10. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. 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 The amendment is not adopted. Next we have, I believe it's the A11. Representative Nash will be offering the A11.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd move the A11. I was speaking to the League of Minnesota Cities lobbyist about the voice of neighbors being able to have a public hearing, and I think there's a lot of value in that, and we've spoken about this. I think that there is a place for us to, as we move this bill forward, to figure out how to allow for those things. As somebody who has fought for a long time to give the voice of the public a venue and an author on this bill, I think that there's got to be some way that we can figure that out moving forward, because the voice of your neighbor is one that you want to listen to. So I'm hoping that we can figure that out. I'm confident we have the ability.
So knowing that, I'm going to withdraw that so we don't put it to a vote. But I just want to make sure that we understand that this bill is not in its final format. We have a ways to go, and that we can address many of the concerns while doing something that is very, very important to fix the housing problem for our state. So with that, I would withdraw the A11.
The A11 has been withdrawn. That is all our amendments. So we have before us the amended DE1, and we do have time for some member comments, and I'll go to Representative Nash.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I shared this story today at the press conference, and I just wanted to give the folks in the room here an opportunity to hear it as well, because I think it's important. Over Christmas, I was down in Texas, and I had the opportunity after, I think it was 2 or maybe 3 in the morning, I was surfing in Instagram, and I saw an advertisement for a housing development that had a very unique product that we don't have here in the state of Minnesota. It's about 1,058 square feet slab on grade home, and there are some in that same development that are a little bit bigger. And I was really intrigued because, as you know, I'm one of the housing nerds. I think we're nerds, housing aficionados. But I wanted to see what is it that they're doing that we're not, that can bring some of these houses into the market and become a solution for home ownership and a reality for people who want to live in their first home. So I got an appointment, and I went out there, and I met their salesperson, and their VP of sales for the Texas region set it all up, and it was great. But because I'm annoyed by being late, I was very early, and I'm sitting in the model home, and I'm listening to the person who is selling the model sell to a woman that was there. And it's not a big home. It's 1,058 square feet, so you can hear everything. But the lady is talking to the salesperson, and she was going back and forth between tears and joy and excitement, because she said, I've been renting my whole life, and I'm wasting my money on rental because I'm never going to have any appreciation equity. I'm never going to have any generational wealth to pass on to my kids. But because this house has become available and we're building these homes in the state of Texas, she can now be a business owner and a homeowner and provide for her kids. And she says, you know, I am a business owner. I clean houses for a living. Now, I don't know what you charge to clean a house, because we do that ourselves in our house, but I don't think you're making a lot. But here's a woman who has children, and she is now able to build or to buy a home for the first time ever. And yeah, I think it was great. She was between tears and joy and was overwhelmed by the prospect of this. But then I thought to myself as I'm driving away, we don't do that in Minnesota, and we should. We should do that. And I don't think that a lot of the things that we've heard as pushback are going to be as doom and gloomish as possible. But I do think there's room to change the bill to make sure that we're addressing some of those things. But I wanted to share that thing with this group, because it was moving. And for those of you that don't remember, I do have a heart, so I am moved every now and then. But it was compelling, because here's a woman who cleans houses, and she's buying a house. And if I would have been able to buy her a bottle of champagne, I would have bought her a bottle of champagne to celebrate with her. There's a lot of things that we're doing in this bill. One of the principal pieces of language that I'm addressing that I brought to the equation is the aesthetic mandate. Aesthetic mandates add cost to the price of a home. And as you've heard me say before, and you're probably all tired of me saying, but I'll say it again, for every $1,000 you add to the price of a home, you're pricing 4,000 people out of the market. That's a big ratio. $1,000 increase, 4,000 people removed from the potential pool of buyers. We can fix that. Because if we let the market, and this is a very free market bill, this is a property rights bill. In doing what we're trying to get done here, we are going to make it so that, and I don't think we're going to do 1,050 feet slab on grade here in Minnesota, because we have building codes that we have to address. But If we can build a version of that house, think of the people who can buy their first home. My kids, your kids, our friends, our neighbors who are moving for the first time, they can buy a little plot of land that they can make their own, and in a couple of years they've built some wealth, and they can begin moving that along the way. That's a great thing. That is the American dream. And we can fix the concerns and the impossibility of that here in the state of Minnesota by working together on this bill. So I am the number three author on this, and I'm pleased to be that. And I want to thank Representative Dotseth for being on the bill with me as well. There will be more. This is a good bill. It's not the last version, but please work on it with us, because we're giving people an opportunity to own their own home. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Representative Nash. Members, we have five members on the list, and we can go a little bit long. I do think it's important to give members a chance to speak, but just if you can, keep it brief so we can get to everybody and let our authors finish up. And we'll go to Representative Hassan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the authors of the bill. This is one of the best conversations in housing that I've had, and I've been in housing for 6 years, you guys. This is my 6 year serving in housing, and the reason why it's one of the best conversations that we're having is both sides of the aisle saying that home ownership is important. Let's do something about it. So thank you for the bill, and thank you, Rep. Nash. I don't think you don't have a heart. I think you have a big heart. And we do agree on some things, and we disagree on other things, but I know you care about home ownership as much as I do. Let's do something about this, and let's remove barriers so more people can have a generational wealth in their families. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Representative Myers.
Thank you, Chair. I just wanted to say thank you to Representative Kozlowski, you know, for taking on this issue and working with Representative Kraft. I do apologize. If I had your cell phone number, I would have called you this weekend to talk about the bill. but I did not. But I just wanted to say thank you.
Representative Cha.
I want to thank all of you for working on this bill. And Representative Ash, you framed it. You know, this is the American dream. You know, my parents, you know, came from a country that we didn't have mortgages. You know, we lived on dirt floors. I was born in a refugee camp. I lived in a tent for 4 years. And so from that perspective, you know, building homes that we can put families in, it's important to Minnesotans. That's why we're here. That's why we sit in this committee and do this work. And I really appreciate the authors and all of you working on this together. And thank you, Chair Howard, for hearing on this. And let's make a home run. Thank you.
Thank you. Next, we have Representative Dotseth.
Thank you, Chair Howard, and Representative Kraft and Kozlowski. Appreciate you moving forward with this bill. I'm honored to actually be involved with the authorship on this bill as well, and I appreciate your willingness to work as this evolves. Like Representative Nash has mentioned, we're not at the final stages, but we'll get there. And I appreciate your willingness to work across the aisle and look at the issues that are at hand here. So I just want to applaud you on this. Thank you.
Vice Chair Igbaje.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to the authors, both Representative Kraft and Representative Kozlowski. This is a really good bill. I also appreciate the efforts that you are doing to ensure that it's a bipartisan, nonpartisan bill. I mean, housing really should not be a partisan issue. It's a place where we all want to live and be able to go home at night. I think just to the folks in the room who, you know, had concerns about the bill, I guess I would frame the question, you know, and we don't have to talk about it now, but thinking about, you know, we know the history of what exclusionary zoning has done. I think there was a testifier that talked about, you know, we're segregating not only just people in housing, but also the types of housing. And so I would just kind of ask in framing, what are the solutions and the suggestions to ensure that we are giving people housing choices, whether it's a multi-generational family that wants to live with the grandparents, or it's a larger family that has multiple kids or aunts and uncles, and they all want to be in the same roof, or opportunities for multifamily home ownership, which we know can also be a pathway to generational wealth building. I think kind of, you know, yes, single family home, white picket fence is kind of the myopic American dream, but at the same time, we know that families in America come in all different shapes and sizes, and we need to ensure that they have housing that also meets their various shapes and sizes. And I think this bill is on the path to doing that, and I look forward to seeing what the final outcome is across with input from members on both sides of the aisle. So thank you.
Lee Johnson.
Chair Howard, Representative Kraft, Representative Kowalski. Thank you for the work on this. It's getting there. It's getting close to where it needs to be, but there's still a little more work to be done. And I want to thank you for listening to everybody, not just one side, but both sides of the aisle here, and trying to get do what's right. Right now, Minnesota is roughly $110,000 homes short of their stock. And that what that has caused, because of the shortage, it's driven up the cost to buy a house to a point where most people can't afford them anymore. And also with the inflation and the higher interest rates, that hasn't helped either. It hasn't helped the renting situation in most areas, because when inflation is high, one of the most things that get hit the hardest is rent. Unfortunately, but it sounds like in Minneapolis they're not having that issue, because they are sitting with only about 70% capacity, where other areas are just 90 to 100% already. But there's other issues that are causing that we won't discuss here. I also want to thank the cities, like the city of Cambridge, that's done things to try to help. Unfortunately, we have cities that are not. I hate putting the hammer down on cities that are trying to work, but sometimes you have to, because of the ones that don't want to do the work to get things done. We have an issue where we do not have the bookends, which is part of the middle. But we have the $350,000 to $800,000 homes out there, $400,000 to $800,000 homes, where most people can't afford them, especially as they're beginning. We don't have the starter homes. We have rental, but when you rent, money goes to somebody else. But when you own a home, you're building equity. And that equity is how you can get your generational wealth. So I wish this bill dealt more with building starter homes, which, by the way, are also the ending home, the other end of the bookend. Because that's once you become empty nesters, you want to downsize, but there's no homes purchase to downsize, that opens up those larger family homes. So I think we need to really push on getting home ownership and not just rental, because it's not the person who's renting that wins in that. It's whoever owns that building. And I want the generational wealth to go with the homeowner. So with that, again, thank you. Like I said, this bill needs just a little more work, but it's getting there, and thank you for your work.
And I'll just make a couple quick comments before turning it back to our bill authors, and just I want to say some thank yous. Thank you to Representative Kraft and Representative Kozlowski for leading on this work and putting all kinds of effort into bringing this group of stakeholders together. And I want to thank the broad coalition, unique coalition of folks that are working on these issues. In my time in the legislature, I haven't seen a coalition like this that includes business, housing advocates, climate, environmental advocates, labor, workers, families, the AARP, and seniors. This is really an impressive coalition coalescing around these issues. And thank you to those groups for all of your work. And thank you to our members that have worked in partnership to bring this proposal forward. And I also want to thank our cities that were here today to share their perspectives. We really value the perspectives, the ingenuity, what our cities bring to this discussion. We really are in this together. Cities and states, our whole state has an interest in these issues, and I really appreciate the ongoing dialogue that we need and the innovation that's happening. More than 1 million Minnesotans are already living in cities where a city has taken some kind of action like we're talking about here in this bill. And so there's a lot of in this that comes from our cities. And so I just value that partnership and know that it will continue. You know, as members have said, this isn't the end of the conversation, but it's a pretty big first step. on such an important issue for all of us. And I'll turn it over to our lead authors on the bill for final comments before a vote.
Thank you, Chair Howard. I'm going to go first here as we roll out of the bill presentation. Just want to say thank you so much for this conversation, for coming across all different sides and all different lines to really tackle this solvable housing crisis before us. You know, as I was listening, I was really struck by somebody who said, the good news is that humans design these systems and that we can redesign them. As somebody who came to this work from the city as a community relations officer who deeply values community input and process, what we're seeing across communities and has been talked about here is that folks who don't have the political influence, who have been disadvantaged, are being boxed out for their right to be able to have access to affordable, secure, stable housing. And as one of our testifiers said, I want this for every Minnesotan. And I think that all of us in this room can legitimately say that we want that for each other, too. So I also want to just thank, you know, that this came apart from that broad swath of coalition partners of labor, I guess, Metro to Greater Minnesota, to really tackle these solvable issues, whether it's infrastructure and making those investments, wages, which are not keeping pace with rent and inflation, that the reality is we have a 100,000 plus unit deficit in Minnesota. We have the silver tsunami coming. Folks who want to downsize and live in communities that are walkable and livable. And so this recommendation that came out of that work to have guaranteed right in commercial districts and density bonuses that takes care of housing affordability, but also our biggest climate challenges that are facing us. With previous opposition to this type of work that has come before, with land use and zoning proposals, here at the Capitol and at the legislature, have cited a lack of assurance that the bills would result in affordable homes. And I just wanted to say that, well, one, this bill does not mandate any middle housing or any commercial affordable housing multi-unit in commercial district. The market will determine that, though we know that the supply and the demand is there. But first, allowing more housing of every kind makes housing more affordable for everybody and stabilizes rents. And second, this bill incentivizes the creation of affordable multifamily homes and puts an end to processes that kill affordable housing developments because they were designed for and by existing residents to keep others out, especially our low-income Black and brown and Indigenous folks. So again, this bill does not ban single-family homes. I think we also need to continue to have the conversation that what is a home and, you know, duplexes, triplexes for many folks across our communities, those are homes and those do build generational wealth. And sometimes because rent is coming in, are actually easier to access loans and to get into them. That this does not mandate the construction of any multifamily home or apartment building. It is just expanding the legally available options throughout the state. So I will just end by saying that all Minnesotans across race, place, age, and ability and beyond deserve the freedom to find a home to rent or buy in our community that they love. And the time for action is now. And let's keep working together to make this happen.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Kraft, you get the final word.
Thank you, Chair Howard, members of the committee. So there's a lot of thank yous have gone around. I'm not going to repeat those. I agree with what everyone said. But there's one person that hasn't yet been thanked, and that is Chair Howard. Mm-hmm. I came to him months ago saying I have a lot of interest in this, and he's been incredibly helpful in steering and helping to really build this coalition. So this doesn't happen without his efforts. This bill, the time for it has come. It is now. I really appreciate the comments, the suggestions, the concerns that folks have, the committee process where we get to mark it up and go through that. And I'm committed, and I know Representative Kozlowski is also committed, to meeting with everyone and anyone to talk through concerns and make this bill better. But to be clear, the status quo isn't working. This project-by-project approach isn't working. Right, we need to do something different. Now, I come very recently from a city council background, and I generally am someone that really favors local control. But the thing about this is a statewide issue, right? And so cities making decisions, maybe intentionally, maybe unintentionally, don't have the frame of reference that we need on this issue. This is requires state action. So, and the other thing I also appreciate, Ben Whalen said, one city can't solve the problem on its own. Very true. So I'd like to just close by reminding the committee that this bill is about removing systemic impediments and setting up incentives so the result is right for housing and climate change, and so more Minnesotans can find homes and build wealth in the communities where they want to live, work, and raise a family. Please vote yes.
Thank you, Representative Kraft. And we have two motions. First, we need to vote to adopt the DE1 as amended. So first, I'll call that vote. All those in favor of the DE1 as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? The DE1 is adopted. And then I will renew my motion that House File 4009, as amended, be recommended to be referred to the State and Local Government Finance and Policy Committee. All in favor, say aye.
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 Opposed, say no. The motion prevails, and the bill is on its way. Thank you, members. Thank you to the public. With that, the meeting, we are adjourned.